So we're in the beginning of chapter 35. We are on Rishonim Day. And in hindsight, really should have put Rashi and Rishonim Day together, because it really isn't very much on the page here. And that we're going to keep within our rules of figuring out what's of doing what's in the Mikros Gedolos here. But there is what to say, and we'll see where it takes us. So the So much of what's going on over the course of this parak is a description of the borders of Eretz Yisrael. We discussed last week what the issue is, why it's necessary to know what the borders of Eretz Yisrael are, right? That is what is necessary for them to conquer, and then they can start talking about conquering other lands around. And as you pointed out, they never actually did. At least, they never actually really did clear out Eretz Yisrael in the way that they were supposed to the borders as they are spelled out over the course of Parak Lamed Aleph. But anyways, the Sforno does jump in here and say, yeah, Zosa Archer Tipu Lachem Menachal and Pasuk Beis. This is the land which will fall to you in inheritance. Tipu Lachem Begoral Kolim Shetich B'Shukulam. That will fall... We are in chapter 34. What did I say?
23.
Okay.
What? 923.
So tipa lachem begoral kodem shetich b'shukulam. It will fall to you by way of a goral before you conquer it. What does that mean? Ki begvul yaos lashon nefila. Right. That this idea of falling to them. V'chein hipil purhal goral. So quoting a pasuk from Esther to that effect. So what does it mean that it's going to fall to them? Because what was conquered outside of the land of Israel did not have to be divided up by way of the lottery system that is being described. That we see that Moshe divided up the land of Sichon and Og without a goral, as is found in Sefer Yehoshua, meaning I think it's what it means, as is found in Sefer Yehoshua, that the inside the border was divided up like a goral. So Moshe did not divide up the first part, right? What's going on? Because we just had in a description earlier of them coming and Moshe dividing up the lands on the other side of the Yarden to the Bnei Gad of Bnei Reuven. So what's going on now in the describing the boundary? What's that the Sforno says? Because if it's outside of Israel, it doesn't have to be divided up by way of this lottery. Why? Ki Eretz Sichon V'og in ba Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. That Sichon V'og did not have the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. V'lo ha'isa ru'uya l'goral asher anyano b'ruach ha'kodesh. And therefore did not need to have a goral whose whole idea of the goral is that it's happening b'ruach ha'kodesh. That is happening according to Hashem's divine inspiration. Hashem is really manipulating and pulling all the cards? I don't know. Putting everybody where they're supposed to be, where they're supposed to be put. So that only applies in the land of Israel. It doesn't apply outside the land of Israel. And in fact, there's comments later on that how was the land on the other side of Eretz Israel divided up? Divided up like everything else is divided up by negotiations. They worked out, the Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven worked out amongst themselves who was going to be in which area. So that this front right off the bat gives you this distinction between what's happening in the boundaries and outside the boundaries. Now, what we discussed last week was the potential of expanding the boundaries. That there is an idea of having the king with the backing of the Sanhedrin go to war in order to expand the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. So that was the question. If you expand the boundaries, so subsequently you could also expand the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Right? You could expand the kedusha of Yerushalayim. You could expand the kedusha of the Makom HaMikdash, which probably I never saw this inside, but I assume that's what happened during the time of the Second Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash was much smaller. Herod comes along and expands the whole thing to the platform that we have today. And Pistamah, he expanded the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash as well. So that is doable. The Gemara describes how that's doable. It pretty much just means you go to the new area with everybody together and you perform an avoda that can only be done in the higher level kedusha of the place. Right? You can go to, I forget exactly what, I think it was, you to expand the borders of Yerushalayim. So you go with the Sanhedrin, being representatives of Klal Yisrael, and you eat Maaser Sheni there. And that's to demonstrate that now the borders of Yerushalayim has been expanded. It would be the same thing with Eretz Yisrael. You can expand the borders of Eretz Yisrael that way. But again, as we discussed, only if the entire land is first conquered. Only can that actually theoretically take place. I'm not sure it ever did. The borders were expanded during the period of Shlomo HaMelech, but I don't think internally it was cleared out the way it needed to be cleared out. I believe it was never actually totally cleared out during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. Okay, or ever, that means, right? Ever. Okay, so we have the borders as they are described over the course of these psukim. And then in verse 13, it says, "Vaitzav Moshe b'nei Yisrael l'emor, zos ha'aretz, this is the land," so the command took place, this is the land which Asher tinaschu usab goral, which you're going to inherit by way of this goral, Asher tziva Hashem l'asis l'sishas ha'matas v'chatzi ha'mata, that Hashem is commanded to give to the 9.5 tribes. Why only the 9.5 tribes? Was 2.5, we're going to be on the other side of the Yarden. No, it actually says, Ki lachu, why? Because Matevene Ruvene, Levei Savosam, Matevene Gadi, Levei Savosam, Vachasi Menashe lachu nachlasam. Because Ruven, Gad, and half of Menashe already took their portions. It's interesting that Ruven is placed here before Gad. Remember, I think there was a Ramban in the beginning of the previous Perek, Perek where it is described them coming, yeah, in Perek Lamed Beis, that the first time it said Reuven first, and then every other time it said Gad first. I think the Ramban points that out because Gad was actually really the drivers of this. They were the real musclemen who were pushing this through. So therefore, Gad gets mentioned first. But actually, you see here again that Reuven is mentioned first before Gad. The Or HaChaim says, "Pirish nesinas tam lahakodem." We're giving reasoning for what came earlier. I mean, we already know this. We already, all right, why was this pasuk necessary? Right? Hashem says, Osha says, I'm giving hereby this, we're giving out to the 9.5 tribes. So why do we need the entire pasuk Yudalid, right, to say, oh, because it's 2.5 tribes that we're already giving. Well, we don't know that. It was a couple prakim earlier, right? We should know that already. So what is going on here? So the Or HaChaim says, Perish Nesinas Tam Lakonim. It actually is giving explanation to the entire previous section. In what way? Lama Higvil Hashem Gevulos Ha'aretz B'Seder Hazeh. Why did Hashem set up these particular boundaries? Ki Lachu Mate. Because the tribe of Reuben and Gad had already taken their portions. Aval Zula Zeh, if it wasn't for that, if it wasn't for that, Hashem would have expanded the land of Eretz Yisrael itself. Which is interesting. Now, what does that mean, that he would have expanded himself? And this is a statement that the Or HaChaim gives. In that parak, when we talked about their expansion, we actually discussed the issue of that it could have been that was already the plan, that's where Gad and Reuven were going to be. Gad and Reuven were always going to be there. But the fact that they came and requested this particular way, that was what got Moshe upset and he was unhappy about. So maybe that's what the Or HaChaim means. That, oh yeah, it was going to be expanded to the place that if it wasn't for Gad and Reuven's plan, we would have had a description of the division of the land of Israel, and would have included the lands of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. To support that, we have an idea that it says that Moshe, that was considered conquering, it was considered a Milchemes Mitzvah. Do you remember what our proof was that it was considered a Milchemes Mitzvah when they conquered those lands of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven were going to be on? Right? There was a proof that we brought, I think the Ramban pointed it out, that indicated that the lands used to conquer Sichon and Og was actually a Melchemes Mitzvah as opposed to simply a Melchemes Rishus. Tick tock. Wow.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. What is perhaps a proof to that? I say perhaps a proof is not really a good way of saying it, but perhaps the supporting that idea is that when were Bnei Yisrael told about how to kosher vessels?
After conquering
what? No.
Before Midian.
Midian, which took place before or after?
Before.
No!
Did we conquer Midian after the Cosby?
No. Well, first of all, that might be true. But Sichon and Og were conquered before the incident of Zimri and Cosby.
Really? Shocked to find
gambling. Shocking! That's because it's tucked away at the very end of Parshas Chukas. Right, Parshas Chukas, a lot of fascinating things happen over the course of Parshas Chukas, and part that's very confusing is the war that took place with Sichon and Og at the very end. So you don't necessarily...
But is it mentioned again later on?
That, what do you mean? That's the description of the war, conquering Sichon and Og. Midian gets scared. Right, Binyan gets afraid that they're going to come for them, and that's Parshas Balak. And at the end of Parshas Balak, then they oppose the woman upon them, and then yada yada yada. They end up having a war.
Right, you are correct.
Thank you. What, was it something you just saw, or now you believe it? Okay, so yada, yada, yada. Then Bnei Yisrael has this war with Midian, and after the war with Midian, they collect all of these vessels, and they're told, if you want to use these vessels, that's great, but you have to kasher them first. So it says to Ramban, why are they only being told about how to kasher vessels that they captured from Midian? Why are they not being told how to kasher vessels that they captured when the war with Sichon and Og?
Right.
That took place two parshios earlier.
Right. Sichon and Og is part of the Holy Land.
Right, Sichon and Og was considered a Melchemes Mitzvah, which would then subject them to the heter of Katle de Chaziri, it's known, the necks of the pigs. Huh? Right, so there is a halacha that we'll get to in the course of Sefer Devarim, that when Bnei Yisrael was conquering the land of Israel, they were permitted to consume any of the food that they came across, even if it was completely not kosher. Even nevela, even non-kosher animals, that was permissible. So it says there... I believe the Ramban, so capturing Sichon and Og was considered part of conquering the land of Israel. In fact, they were Emorim, they were Amorites, right? So therefore they were permitted to use those vessels. They didn't have to be concerned about the prohibited foods that were there. So therefore they didn't have to be instructed on how to kasher those kalim. It was only a couple parshios later when they conquered Midian. Midian had no business being part of Eretz Yisrael. In fact, that's why they fought with Midian, because Midian started up with the Jews and they had no reason to start up with the Jews. But when they conquered their spoils could not just be consumed from. They actually had to be kashered first. Yeah, kashered. Well, kashered and perhaps tovel.
Yeah.
That's a discussion that we had when we covered that at the time.
You say all this to the argument that those lands were...
That it perhaps was going to be part of Eretz Yisrael. The reason to support that it was not going to be part of Eretz Yisrael it's a little hard to understand. So... Is that what Avram was shown? Right? This whole idea that Or HaChaim is suggesting is a little bit problematic. That the borders were going to be different, but yet Avram was shown Eretz Canaan. Right? Presumably he was shown the borders of Eretz Canaan. So it would be a definite thing. So how do you work that out? That, you know, Hashem told them, you know, this is going to be the size of the land unless any of the tribes back out. If any of the tribes back out, so it's going to be a little bit smaller. A little hard to. Right?
Okay. When Moshe made the promise with Moshe that if they went in, they would get their land. If they didn't go in, they would get their ancestral land, but not the land. Remember? You know what I'm talking about?
No.
God and Reuven.
Yeah.
Moses was upset.
Right.
And they said, If we go in with the troops,
right,
and then we'll take this land. If we don't,
we discussed that. And if we don't, so then we'll get our inheritance to everyone else. So go to Ar, right? So the inheritance of everyone else would have been someplace else. It sounds like,
right?
Unless it wasn't, they just didn't know. Okay, it's vague. It's very hard to try to figure out questions of what ifs in the Chumash. You know, like, oh, how to work that out. All right, so Pasuk Tesvav, Shnei Matos v'Chatzi Matel, they're going to take their portion, says the Or HaChaim. But here Moshe did not divide it up, right? Making that point that we commented on earlier, that Moshe did not divide up that land. They worked it out themselves with their own negotiations. Fine. Then we continue on. It says, these are the names of those representatives, those people, as I think Rashi used the term, apotropi, the people who are going to come and be the lawyers, the representatives on behalf of all the tribes when they're going to be at the table to figure out how we're going to divide up the land. So the Or HaChaim makes an interesting point. We read it through, I didn't notice it, but then you read it again, it's like, huh? Yeah, that's a good point. Pasuk Yutes 19. These are the names of the people. L'matei Yehuda, Kalev ben Yefuneh. Good so far? L'matei ben Shimon, Shmuel ben Amihud. Right, in the tribe of Shmuel ben Amihud. L'matei ben Yamin, Elidad ben Kislon. And then, in Pasuk Chavez, L'matei ben Gad Dan Nasi, Buki ben Yagli. And L'vnei Yosef L'matei ben Menashe Nasi, Chaniel ben Ephod. Everybody catch that difference? Right, the first three don't get labeled as Nasi. Huh. Yeah. Striking. Right? Why don't the first three get labeled as Nasi? So the Or HaChaim says, Tzarech Ladas, Lama Nishtanu Mata Yehudu Mata Shimon Mata Binyamin, Shalo Hiskir Nasi Behem. It doesn't mention Nasi. So Vulai says, well, maybe one answer is, Ki Leosan Suchem Zichron Nasi Echa Nasi Echad, because if you look at the passage before, it says there was a Nasi for each tribe. So once there's Nasi each tribe, if we're going to start listing names, so then you're obviously listing the Nasiim for each tribe. So, but then after you knock off three, so then maybe you forgot who we're talking about. So then you have to go back to mentioning who the tribes are. Therefore, it has to get mentioned again, right? So that's you know.
Not very satisfying.
Yeah. It wouldn't be a very good drasha on Shabbos morning, right?
Oh, we forgot.
I wouldn't get a yasher koch from Bruce afterwards. It would be one of the like. Yeah.
There's no extra words
there. You said it before. Yeah. So says the Arachaim again. Varisi b'shem Rabbeinu Nisim Gon. He says, no, I'll give you a different explanation. Ki b'Yehuda lo hotzrach. It didn't get saved by Yehuda. Why? Ki yedua Kalev l'nasi. Well, who's Kalev? Everybody knows who Kalev is. Now, we don't really know who Kalev is. We know Kalev as a spy. I'm not sure Kalev was ever described. Kalev wasn't described in Parshas Nasi, in Parshas Naso as the Nasi, though.
Was Kalev married to Miriam?
Yes.
Miriam's husband.
Bruce is on top of the...
Father of four.
Right. Who is the Nasi in Parshas Naso? Nachshon ben Aminadav. Right now, keep in mind, this is 40 years later, so obviously they're going to be different at this point. So I don't know how we're supposed to know. Oh, yeah, Kalev, he's the Nasi. All right. But anyway, that's what he says. But at least we all know who he is. Shimon lo haya roi l'nasi. Why? Shimon didn't get a Nasi. Why? Because they had a vacated seat. Why do you think Shimon had to vacate their Nasi seat?
Really?
Mishu Maisa Zimri.
Ah.
Ah.
Yeah, I was thinking of it.
Right. See, so it sounds like they did have someone at the table. Shmuel ben Amihud came and supported them at the table. By the way, it's interesting. His name is Shmuel. Right? Shmuel in the Torah. Where's Shmuel in the Torah? There you go. But right, he came to the table, but he like didn't get his plaque. Didn't say senator. His plaque just said Shmuel ben Amihud.
Mister
Amihud. And then Mishum Maisa Zimri. I said Binyamin. Elidad ze Eldad. Right? And then with Binyamin, who's Binyamin's shevet? Elidad ben Kislon. So who's Elidad ben Kislon? So he's a little, you know, he was in the witness protection program. His name was really Eldad. He added a yud, nobody would know. Right? So he was really Eldad. Who was Eldad? So Eldad was the one who was Eldad and Medad. They were the ones who were prophesizing in the camp that they came and played to Moshe, right? These people are, right? So he's one of them. So Eldad, Ukfar Zach Lenevu, he already was a prophet. Vehoradahi lo likro Nasi. And it would be a diminishment for him to be called a Nasi, which is interesting. Right? Which would you rather be, a Nasi or a Navi? Only one word difference. And in fact, actually, just realized, right? There's something called Atbash. Aleph and Taf can be switches, and Beis and Shins can be switched. So Nasi and Navi. Ask your rabbi about that. What do you think? Yeah, ask Rabbi Shprecha what he thinks about that. Navi and Nasi.
Well, it's obviously.
What? But why can't you be both? I would also add in, perhaps a Navi is a little bit better off, because when describing the Korban Chatos that a Nasi brings, it says when a Nasi sins, as opposed to, I'm not sure, does a Navi have, yeah, a Navi has his own. A Navi says if a Navi sins, right? So what's the distinction? So what's the Nasiim? They're in public life, right? They're obviously going to make mistakes at some point over the course of their career. You want to say something? Yeah?
The comments here in the Art Scroll Chumash says the Torah lists the names of 10 tribal princes.
Uh-huh.
So they actually, the comments indicate that these ten.
Yeah, they all are Nasiim, but Or HaChaim is going through them. Why don't they get their label? Yeah, he might be a Nasi also. Yeah. But to call a Nasi, it's like calling a senator a congressman. He's technically a congressman.
Yeah.
Pasnished. Welcome to America. Yeah, there's only 100 senators, and there's
435. 435,
right? 12
Nasis, and
there were tons of Navis
later on.
Right, that's a good point. Right. I'm not sure.
It depends on which setting. I was at the dinner with the new head of Citibank for Sweden. Not only Sweden, but he held a speech. It was actually funny. He talked about the king of Sweden. But he said, so I had to choose. And his title was head of Europe.
Uh-huh.
I want to be head of Europe.
Ah, okay.
But that was only for Citibank.
I hear. All right, so So the Efshar Odlam, I think there's one more possibility. It says Kilo Yachas Nasius Le Kalev Al Yehud Mishum Kavud Malchus Shalom Dimimena. That also is pasnish to call Kalev a Nasi, but the king's going to come from Yehuda. So we're going to call him the Nasi. He's not really the king. It's not so nice. I'm not sure why it's not so nice. V'chamokin leVinyamin. So Yehuda Mishum Shemimenu Mitchilas Hamalchus Bispel Shu Shal Ishimini. And Binyamin is the same thing. Was the king's going to come from Binyamin? Who's that? Shal is going to come from Binyamin. So therefore, it's pasnish to call someone a Nasi. V'oradahi Lo Likros Nasi, and then after that, and then I read the wrong line here. The Shimon Taimo Nachon Kedivrei Hagaon. What about Shimon? Rav Nissim Gaon got that one right. What was the issue with Shimon? Because the issue with Cosby, so therefore they had to sort of abandon their title of Nasi. Okay, and that takes us to the end of the parak. It takes us out of time. All right, so we'll stop here. I guess Mirsa Hashem Halacha Day on something tomorrow. I have no idea what we're going to do Halacha Day on. Well, I have to think of something between now and tomorrow.
So, all right.